WhatsApp. It's exactly 10 to 8. When a parent is sent to prison, the impact isn't just on them, of course, but on the whole family. And an Oxfordshire charity is highlighting the need for more support for parents and children, especially when the person has been sentenced for a sexual offence. A report out this week by the charity Children Heard and Seen has found that children of sex offenders struggle more than others who have a parent in prison. You'll hear from the report's author in a moment. But first, some words from Sylvia about her experience. Her dad was jailed when she was 15. She's now 21. She's been talking to Sophie.
I really remember, it sounds really dramatic, but I really remember thinking I will never be happy again. Oh. It was a real, like, fundamental loss. And I've described it before as a type of grief, because someone that you know is gone, but not in a normal way that people are used to or know how to react to. So you're kind of grieving the loss of a life that you used to have and the loss of a parent that you used to have. But meanwhile, they're not dead. They're still there. They're just a new incarnation of the person.
And I guess that the another difficulty with it is that different people in your family may feel differently about it. People, your mates, probably aren't going through the same thing as you. And so it's really hard to know. I mean, even when someone dies, it's hard to know what to say to your friend. When that happens, I guess that people just don't know the language, like what to say to their mates about it.
The language point is really interesting, actually, because even from a social services point of view, they didn't know what language to use for us. They would refer to the non-abusing and the abusing parent. And I had two non-abusing parents. They had never, ever abused any of us. So that's a really important point on language. How can you deal with a family if you don't know how to speak to them? And exactly with friends, everyone would just say, I'm really sorry. And that's all you really can say. The problem came for me when people would blame me for something that happened 40 years ago. What do you respond to that? How do you, as a 15-year-old, reconcile the idea that people no longer want to be associated with you because of something that somebody else did?
And so the new report, you know, on better understanding the experiences of children like you, is it a case of, you know, people like you maybe going in there and helping, you know, in the future? Or is it something you would rather step away from? How do you feel about it?
I'm delighted. I'm so pleased that someone is asking us questions and that someone is interested, because nobody wants to ask us anything, because they're so, probably worried about upsetting people, but also scared of the crime. And I totally understand that. But it's really important that somebody asks us questions. I'm 21 now. I'm aware that I'm no longer a child, but I am still the child of someone who went to prison. And for as long as people will listen to me, I'll tell them what's wrong with the system, because somebody has to. We have a system where the children are not considered. Only the perceived risk to the children is considered, but not the well-being of the child. And that should be everyone's number one priority.
And of course, it's not just the children who are impacted, it's the partners of the person who committed the crime. Emma's also been speaking with us. An actor has voiced her interview here to protect her anonymity. She started by telling Alison Dawes about how she went about telling her kids about their dad.
There's no roadmap. So in a way, I just had to use my instincts to make that age appropriate for them. And then to just allow them really to ask any questions. I probably underestimated the ability of my oldest to understand maybe what was happening, but also underestimated their ability to absorb the information and to comprehend it. And I think what happened initially was that I probably didn't give them enough information, and there was this huge confusion. And then there's no help with that. And I think in withholding the information, certain parts of it, that didn't help. And I also think, as well as this, when the information was made available, there was almost this huge reaction, because it was a new narrative about their father, and one which they did not understand and they could not comprehend, and they didn't know, why can't Dad take us anywhere anymore?
Did they take that out on you?
Yes. For example, in the lockdowns, I couldn't go out and take exercise on my own or have a break, because I was supervising contacts. So if I went for a walk, they had to come for a walk, and they didn't necessarily want to do that. There are so many ongoing implications, because we moved and we left our life behind. And that means also anyone, many people that we've known for years, people that would send Christmas cards and send letters to say what they'd done all year. People that I knew on social media, I suddenly ghosted them, and I had to do that, because if I had kept in touch with them, and then if they saw it, when it was reported, I would run the risk of them saying where we lived and it would follow us. I had to make an escape.
Ross Hextall is the funding and research coordinator at the charity Children Heard and Seen. Good morning to you, Ross. What are the main difficulties that you come across that children and partners face when a parent is in prison for one of these offences?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. One thing that really stood out in doing the research, especially for young people that are entering their teenage years, is how difficult it can be to learn that your parent has committed this kind of offence. So it's a time when you're finding out who you are, and it can really disrupt a young person's sense of identity when it hasn't fully formed yet. For a lot of children, that's made a lot worse when they have to move away from their home, move away from their friends, and even change their names to avoid community stigma, which links into the other big problem, which is community backlash to this kind of offense. So vigilante groups will often go out of their way to publish home addresses and details and incite violence against sex offenders. The thing that people don't seem to realize is that when that offender themselves is in prison, there are children and partners living in the home that face that backlash. So we had one child who couldn't go to school because he had been so badly beaten up by the people in his class and being told things like, if my dad had done that, I would have killed myself. Some families have had to move cities because the shaming is so bad, and this obviously separates children from friendship groups that they might have had to.
Ross, these are horrific stories. What has to change here then? What needs to happen at a government level, presumably?
Well, hopefully one of the big things we'll see moving forward is a better understanding in not only professionals who work with children, maybe in schools, youth workers and so on, but also just greater empathy and understanding from society as a whole. I mean, people have so much anger towards sexual offenders, which is completely like understandable, but they don't realize how that anger like affects the children at home who have done nothing wrong. So hopefully by shining a light on these experiences, there'll be more empathy. And that's why the report's been published on the Children Heard and Seen website. We really wanted it to be free to access and reach as many people as possible.
Thank you very much, Ross. Good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. Ross from the charity Children Heard and Seen. We contacted the Department for Education. They're responsible for children's services. They say it's local councils that need to identify problems and decide what help is needed. Local Government Association says it's vital that children's social care is adequately funded by government so that councils can intervene early to prevent a child or young person reaching crisis point. And the association says that despite councils diverting funding from other services into children's social care, soaring demand means that councils are having to make difficult decisions about spending at the moment. It's just coming up to 8 o'clock.